Hello, creepies, and welcome to another middle-aged mini-episode on the Middle-Aged and Creeped Out podcast. Enjoy the show.
Hey, creepies, welcome to Middle-Aged Mini 170. Nate is your tech engineer, and we are your hosts, Todd and Sean, and we are middle-aged and creeped out. What's going on, guys?
Hey.
Having a wonderful night.
Nice. It is a wonderful night.
I love how much thought you put into these greetings. Right? It's me. I just jump into it.
Mm-hmm. I'm starting to look forward to this. How's Nate going to say it? It's not really what he says. It's how.
It's that command of the emotions he has.
Right.
How are you doing? You doing okay?
I'm doing well.
I don't think we ever ask you.
You don't, but that's okay.
Who cares about good. How Todd's doing?
No, and what good. About this little cooler weather?
Yeah, I like it.
Fall, we didn't talk about that on the... on the pool.
We did not.
But yeah.
It's nice.
Spooky season.
Sitting in a hot Connex sweating.
Yeah.
That's always
leaves
good.
Leaves are on the ground. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway. No, I'm doing well. Thank you. How about we just get right into it?
Okay.
Sean, what are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about the Ear Inn in New York City. And this is my pick. And if interested, please go and check our show notes for the source links we used for this topic.
Awesome. So how about a little foundation?
What are we in?
Huh?
What are we in?
What are we in? What?
In the ear.
Oh, in the ear. This is ear in.
We're in.
We're in the ear in. Wow. I like that.
A lot of play on words with this one.
Mm-hmm. True. All right. So the foundation background is situated in the historic James Brown house. Not the James Brown, but the one that we're used to.
Step back. Kiss myself.
I still love the videos where the videos of actual James Brown coming up and he's all sweaty, he's like,
oh my gosh,
you know, they like
dripping.
So awesome.
I like Eddie Murphy myself.
Yes, I do too.
Dancing in the hot tub.
Situated in the historic James Brown house, the Ear Inn is one of the oldest operating drinking establishments, let's call it a beer bar, in New York City. The building was constructed around 1770 for James Brown, an African-American aide to George Washington during the Revolutionary War. He is said to be depicted in the famous Emanuel Lutz painting of the victorious Delaware River crossing. It says Brown had a lucrative career in the tobacco trade, affording him the fashionable townhouse just down the street from Washington's Richmond Hill estate, which later housed John Adams and Aaron Burr. A lot of history here.
And it's not the Jim Brown that played football.
No, right? Not that Jim Brown either.
The great legend. James Brown. Who passed away not that long ago.
Not too long ago, you're right.
Anyway, okay.
No, but he is in that picture. Have you ever seen that? You know this picture, I know, but the crossing of the Delaware.
Yeah.
See. But he's this. It's actually very hard to see him. But he is. He's got.
He's laying down.
Well, no, he's got. He's
he's laying down on the boat, Nate.
African American guy with his head.
They sort of hit him.
Kind of. Yeah, they did kind of hide him a little bit.
Okay.
But that's.
I see.
He's believed to be one of George Washington's, like right hand man, basically.
Gotcha. Kind of like Scottie Pippen to Michael Jordan.
Exactly. We can call him Scotty if you want.
Says that. Scotty Brown. They slung home-brewed beer and whiskey to sailors coming in droves and then from the nearby Hudson River. The sailors were also fed for free as long as they bought drinks.
Okay.
So it made it very appealing to hungry and thirsty men.
Mm. You don't say.
I do say.
You did. Well, you just did, didn't you? Huh. I like it.
They weren't allowed to, because it had the face. You're not allowed to change any of the face because it's such an old building,
right?
And like new. There's only one. This is one of six buildings that are of this era still left in New York City. So you know how it says bar, and so they're like, well,
change it to the ear.
They change it to the ear. So that's what's funny. Yeah, they did that
like
on
it.
Purpose.
I like it.
Very cool. Yeah, said prohibition curbed the sale of alcohol as the restaurant acted as a speakeasy. In the same building, the upstairs apartment has served as a smuggler's den, brothel, doctor's office, and boarding house. But the main level has unwaveringly been a hot spot for dining and drinking.
Well, I don't drink alcohol, but I definitely do the dining. I'll drink my sweet tea, I guess.
I'm sure they got sweet tea.
So you're already putting down or laying down the gauntlet?
Laying down.
There we're going.
Put this on the list.
Got it.
Have you ever, either one of you, been to New York? I mean, just the state itself.
I've been to the state and New York City.
Have you? What did you think about it? How long ago was it?
Oh, it was 2001.
Oh, okay.
Just before, it was the April before 9/11, and I've not been back.
Oh, gosh.
That's how much I loved it. No, I actually do want to go back, but Jenna's never been. The kids have never been.
Amy's been a couple times because her brother lived there.
I enjoyed visiting. I would not want to live there, but visiting is a whole other thing. It's amazing, honestly. Right. And New York State's fun to go around, too. I mean, it's got its own beautiful parts.
So. Right. Oh, sure, yeah.
This is interesting because when it was James Brown, at the time, the Hudson River shoreline was just 5 feet from Brown's front door. During his lifetime, the city became increasingly active. An exponentially growing shipping economy triggered changes in the neighborhood and Manhattan at large. The river was filled to the West Street, and new piers were built in to facilitate the constant shipping traffic, docking boats en route to everywhere from California to China. When James Brown passed, the building took the first steps on its current path, satiating the thirsty in an unparalleled fashion. In the mid-1800s, Thomas Cook sold home-brewed beer and crocks of corn whiskey to a constant wave of sailors. At the turn of the century, the brewery morphed into a restaurant, like you were saying here, Nate. A dining room was constructed where the backyard and outhouse once stood. Prohibition did not deter the bar, which became a speakeasy during the mandated dry period. And they said, being right off the water, that's where they could a lot of times sneak in the alcohol. but yeah, you said that it was a doctor's office, all that, but they had, they did have women there as well. Mm-hmm. The women of the night, right?
Interesting. This was once dubbed the defining institution of its neighborhood by Doug Cooper from the New York Times. No bar this idiosyncratic, earns that reputation without a few ghost stories, and the Ear Inn doesn't have just a few rumors of sightings, but at least one proper ghostly regular. One of the most established regulars, known as Mickey the Sailor. He was a regular in his life, having spent the vast majority of his time and money at the bar when he wasn't away at sea. He loved being at the inn so much, it's said that he used to sometimes plead with bar staff to keep the place open after they'd shut down the shop for the night. Nate, since we're kind of on the same one, you want to read Mickey's death?
Sure. There's no clear answer on how Mickey sailed his last mortal voyage. One leading theory is that Mickey, after a long trip at sea, craved alcohol. After disembarking his ship, he dashed from the port into the bar in a deranged froth, desperate for a drink of hard liquor. He got what he wanted and more as he drank and drank and drank until it poisoned him. It is believed, per the theory, that he died on the very place he sat, his bar stool, and that his spirit, untiered by his cause of death, has been an ongoing patron ever since. The other leading theory of Mickey's death states that Mickey wasn't away at sea, but right at his home away from home, the Ear Inn. In 1920, he had a normal night per his habits of heavy drinking, but then decided to go to his real home as he drunkenly sauntered out of the bar. He walked his cut short. He was struck by a car in the midst of crossing the street and shortly died from his injuries. Hmm. Given this account, it is possible that the spirit took perpetual refuge in the bar, as it was the last safe place his mortal form knew before his sudden death.
Oh my gosh.
Poor Mick.
The reason I know sauntered is because for whatever reason, when I work with patients and tell them, you know, hey, you want to get up and move around, or let's get up and move around or walk, they don't like those normal things, but you say something like, well, let's saunter out into the hallway. They'll do it. Mm-hmm. So saunter's one of my favorites. This says Mickey the Ghost, right? So this is like you say, Nate. Oh boy, I can't do the...
My throat is he still not. No,
it's
boo.
I don't know how you
that
did
went
that.
Bad. So, that wasn't bad.
That was a little better. Okay, so Mickey the Ghost, not the Mickey Mouse, but after his death, Mickey's love of the Ear Inn is as strong as ever, albeit even more debauched as he's been emboldened by crossing over. As a ghost, he developed a preference for a particular style of supernatural teasing and torment. He doesn't wail and spook bar patrons like the average ghoul or seek to drive visitors into spirals of shock and fear with grotesque projections. Instead, he prods at waitresses, making them squirm and shriek all the same from his literally cold, presumptuous advances. Female guests who dare to stay upstairs overnight have also complained that Mickey has cheekily snuck into bed with them, seeking to cozy up with the warmth from the feminine living. In addition to his lustful pursuits, Mickey also has, in stereotypical sailor fashion, a penchant for casually stealing swigs from patrons' drinks. How about that? Where does it go? Huh? All too commonly, one moment a bar goer orders a drink, brings it from the bar, and sets their drink down at the table. The next moment, their drink is mysteriously quaffed, leaving them with both a dry glass and deep, deep confusion. Because of Mickey's meddling, arguments tend to break out among bar visitors, as they believe one of their friends must have downed the drink when they weren't looking.
It's funny.
Or that the bartenders are playing some sort of trick or illusion for them, or on them. For years, the ownership has remained firm that no, their employees are not magicians or pranksters. That's simply Mickey being Mickey. It's possible that Mickey acts out like this because he's merely bored. But who wouldn't be if you'd had to wait for over a century for your ship to come back into the harbor?
Playing tricks on him, huh?
Not nice, right?
Mickey.
Oh, Mickey. Mickey, you're so fine.
Oh, Mick.
I was thinking Rocky.
Rocky, yep. Yeah.
Come on, Rock.
That's a good one. I do like that. There's other friends at the bar. It says, in 2014, per an account in Travel and Leisure magazine, the boyfriend of a waitress at the bar spotted a ghost. The couple had been staying the night upstairs. The waitress woke up in the middle of the night to her boyfriend in a glassy-eyed daze. She asked what had him so intensely, dreamily focused. Wow. He replied, "I'm just saying hello to the strange man standing in the corner." Whether or not this strange man was also Mickey remains unknown. After all, it is only partially befitting of his behavior. Mickey would have gotten into bed with him, but there are anecdotal reports of otherworldly patrons at the inn beside the storied sailor. Other ghosts said to dwell at the bar are described varyingly as former patrons who, like Mickey, died from drinking excessively, sailors who also adored the bar so much that they've still not decided to leave, and courtesans caught between worlds. No matter who you may run into at the Ear Inn, you're sure to have a night to remember at this irreverent dive and come out with your own stories to tell, if perhaps also a little more watchful of your drinks and of ghostly sailors and their wandering hands. Interesting. That's funny, though.
It really is.
Poor Mick's getting blamed for everything.
Sounds like a fun place to go visit.
It does. It is. I mean, it's obviously got history, but it's also world-renowned. I think this is interesting. I don't know if you guys saw this, but after Prohibition, the bar reopened its doors to the public. There was no name for it. Didn't need one. Its reputation as a lady-free clubhouse for sailors to eat, drink, gamble, and be merry brought business from all over the world. Patrons nicknamed the untitled bar the Green Door for obvious reasons, and the motto back then was known from coast to coast. The bar was finally given a name when current owners Martin Sheridan and Richard R.I.P. Rip Heyman took over in the late 70s. They called it the Ear Inn to avoid the Landmark Commission's lengthy review of new signage, simply covering the round parts of the long-standing neon bar sign, leaving it to read ear. And so a modern legend was born. They said also the ear part had to do with they wanted to turn it into a music dive, like a place for musicians to come and hang out and play music. And it even, like, there's a magazine called Ear. And then there's a tie-in with that, too. But I'm not sure.
I don't get it.
The interesting thing is that, like, would you really, hey, let's go down and have something to eat at the Ear. It's like, I don't know. Kind of gross.
I mean, it's just a weird name, like, but
yeah,
Ear Inn. It's kind of easy to say.
Let's go grab a.
You probably share your food. You're like, ear.
Yeah.
it's better than like,
that works.
Let's go eat at Uranus or something.
Wow, where did that?
Sorry. That's a fudge factory, right? No, it really is. No, I swear. Have you ever heard of Uranus fudge?
Yeah.
I swear to God.
Yeah, that's on the way to.
Yeah, there's. But it's in it's like in Missouri.
It's on
I-70. There's one. Yes. So, okay, you know that. I was like, I'm not making that up, I promise.
Yeah, I've seen it two or three times heading to the soccer games and heading to Randolph County.
There's no better fudge than Uranus. Sorry.
I apologize for.
Take that as you will, right?
That's Sean Laming. Sean Laming.
Lamey.
Sean Layman. He has a feet. I can't even talk now. Got me all flustered. Anything else, Sean? Nate, you got anything on the ear end? Any other ghostly specters?
This place is frozen in time. It just feels like, I mean, you get that, the historic feel of it when you go in, at least from the pictures. I would have been by here because they say this is like around Greenwich Village and, you know, on the outskirts, kind of like close to Soho. And so I definitely would have been around here, but I wouldn't have known anything about the bar when I went by it. So
sure.
That would have been a minute ago.
I like the story about Mick.
Yeah, I do too.
Seems like he's a,
cut me Mick.
Yeah.
Cut me Mick. Did you guys see any,
come on kid, get up.
you'd assume that James Brown's there somewhere.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
Get up, you bum.
Oh,
one of the mixes there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was good. I liked it. So we done with the ear in?
We're going.
What?
I can't hear you.
Okay. You can't hear me?
You can't hear me?
Did you hear,
Sean? Well, if that's all we got on that, which is a fun little topic, Nate, help us out, brother.
Come here and listen to me. It's a wrap.
He said it's a wrap, so folks, that's it. He has spoken. Thanks, Nate. And we want to thank you, Creepies, for listening to Middle Age Mini number 170 and our discussion on the ear in of New York City. Until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
See ya.
Oh, boy.